What a beautiful day we have to come out and to worship God. Eddie's been, me and Eddie have been going back and forth all morning about this mic, so I hope I got it right. Give me a thumbs up or just wave me down if I don't have it right. Anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to stand before you to present a lesson from God's Word as always. We got some visitors with us. You're our honored guest. We hope you'll be back with us every opportunity you might have. And we've got some members. We've got several members. We thank you for your presence as well. We often don't do that, but it is important that you're here. For our members, you might remember that at the beginning of January, we started a series of sermons. A series of sermons about building up the church, making the church more, making it bigger, making it working within the church. We began talking about resolutions, making 2019 better than 2018. And then we had a sermon on helping the poor, and one on personal work, one on visiting the sick, one on Bible study. Lord willing, this morning and this evening, we're going to wrap up that series as I talk about bringing back the lost, and this evening Matt will be talking about converting the lost. Obviously, those two topics are pretty kin to each other. Matt and I had a little bit of a conversation about how it's going to go and what it's going to, how they kind of differ, where we should try to focus. And all I can say is that I'm extremely glad that I'm presenting this morning and Matt's presenting this evening because I'm probably going to use every one of his points and every one of his verses. But we're going to try to frame our thoughts this morning as we go into our study about bringing back the lost. That is, bringing those back that have perhaps wandered away, that have become lost, that maybe once knew the truth or once were filling up a space on the pew beside you. And as you look to your left or you look to your right, you see that empty space. That's how we're going to try to frame our thoughts this morning and how we're going to try to focus. Several years ago, I went backpacking. And if you don't know what backpacking is, it's basically you have a gigantic backpack. You throw everything you might need for 2 or 3 days in that backpack and you walk out into the woods for 2 or 3 days and you camp and you move and you camp and you move. And we went to a mountain in the Smokies. It's about the third or fourth highest mountain in that mountain range in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. It was called Gregory's Bald. If you know what a bald is, then you understand this. But for some of you that don't, it's basically it's a huge meadow, a grassy meadow, no trees around it, way up on top of a mountain. So we hike up to Gregory's Bald. It's right outside of Cades Cove. I imagine a lot of you have probably driven through there, and you've, whether you've known it or not, you've looked up at those mountains surrounding Cades Cove, and you've seen Gregory's Bald. It's about 4,950 feet high, almost 5,000 feet high. Now, above Cades Cove, it's about almost 3,000 feet. So it's about a 3,000-foot, 2,900-foot vertical climb from Cades Cove to the top of Gregory's Bald in less than 5 miles. So it's a pretty steep trail. As you get to the very top of that trail, something happens. You walk out of the trees. It's almost like walking into another room or walking into another area, another place on the map. You suddenly walk out of those trees. And when you walk out of those trees, the trail gets really, really steep and it goes up this grassy embankment up the side of that mountain, then it tapers off. It goes into a big dome, a grassy meadow. We had camped at a lower campsite at the base of Gregory's Bald, and we had walked up there that day. And as we were walking up, after we walked up the bald and walked around and watched the sunset, watched it become dusk, we began walking back down. And as we were walking back down, a young man came running up to us, breathless. And between gasp for breath, he said, how far is it to our car? I said, sorry, where are you parked at? Well, we're parked back here at the trailhead. So, well, you got about 5 miles if you turn around. If you don't, you got about 14. To make a long story short, this young man had misread the map. And it was he and his wife that were out there hiking that day. And he had misread the map, and he couldn't figure out how to get, they didn't know where in the world they were. They just evidently picked a trail right off of Cades Cove and decided, hey, let's go for a hike and this will eventually lead us back to the car. Man had nothing with him, no flashlights, no water, no nothing but his car keys in his pocket. His wife had nothing either. So we suddenly found ourselves here at the top of Gregory's Bald, nearly 5,000 feet above sea level. Found ourselves with the odd responsibility to take this young man and his wife who were lost back down the trail and back to their car. As I did that, I thought, you know, there's a lot of lessons that we as Christians can learn from that. Most notably is sometimes as Christians we have that responsibility too, do we not? That we have the responsibility of bringing back the lost. In Luke chapter 15, in verses 3 through 7 that Brad read for us this morning, Jesus tells a parable. He says, "What man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in open pasture, and he goes after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he's found it, he lays it on his shoulders rejoicing, and when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I found my sheep which was lost.' I tell you, in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." Jesus obviously tells us who the sheep represent, right? We can all see from that parable and we can all understand that the sheep obviously represent the flock, represent us, and that one sheep that goes astray, well, that's the person that strays from the flock. But who is the shepherd? Oftentimes we read that parable and we really don't think about that. Who is the shepherd in this parable? Well, I believe in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 16 through 18, Paul tells us very pointedly, very bluntly, who the shepherd is. There Paul says, "For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for I'm under compulsion. For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." Now listen to that sentence one more time. "For woe is me if I do not preach the gospel." That's my duty. That's my responsibility. "For if I do this voluntarily, I have reward. But if against my will, I have a stewardship entrusted to me." You know what a stewardship is? A stewardship is a responsibility. It is a duty. "What then is my reward? That when I preach the gospel, I may offer the gospel without charge, so as to not make full use of my right in the gospel." What I'm saying to you this morning is that as Christians, we have a duty, a responsibility, to rescue the perishing, to bring back the lost. We used to sing an old song when I was at Bible school called "Rescue the Perishing." One of my friends who I graduated with, he used to tell this story every time we'd sing the song, that his grandmother for a long time thought this song said "Rescue the Pear Machine." Rescue the pear machine, not the perishing. It doesn't say, I don't know what a pear machine is, but this song does not say pear machine. It says "rescue the perishing." In fact, the fourth verse of this song says, "Rescue the perishing, duty demands it. Strength for thy labor the Lord will provide. Back to the narrow way, patiently win them. Tell the poor wanderer a Savior has died. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying. Jesus is merciful. Jesus will save." Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 18. Prophet writes, God says this, "When I say to the wicked, you will surely die, and you do not warn him or speak out to warn the wicked from his wicked way that he may live, then that wicked man will die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand." It can't really get more plainer than that. That God says, if you know someone who's living in sin, who has wandered away, who has become lost, then you as a Christian, you have the obligation, you have the duty, no, you have the responsibility as a child of God to go to that person, to try, to bring them back, to bring that erring person to fill that space beside you, to your left, your right, in front of you, behind you, to fill that space with that person who is no longer there. His blood I will require at your hand. Luke chapter 15, verses 8 through 10. Picking back up. In the second parable Jesus tells us in this series, "Or what woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I had lost.' In the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Have you ever lost a coin? I know I've lost a coin. It's easy to lose. Or perhaps you've lost keys or you've lost something else small. My point is, there are things in this life that are pretty easy to lose. We've got a set of trailer keys at home, and about every other week, Caroline will lose those trailer keys. By the way, Caroline unfortunately woke up and was sick this morning, so that's why Molly and her are not here this morning. But about every other week, she'll lose those trailer keys, and we have to turn the house upside down to find them. My point is that some things are pretty easy to lose. As we're trying to bring back the lost, as we're trying to go to that person, we need to keep that in mind, that getting off the right path can be easy. It can be an easy thing to do. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 through 14, here it says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. There are many who enter through it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it." It can be easy to get off that narrow path, can it? Romans chapter 3 and verse 23 says, "For all have sinned." Here Paul says, "For all have sinned and therefore fall short of the glory of God." It can be easy to get off that narrow path. It can be easy to get lost in the darkness because of the simple fact that we live today in a very dark world. Matthew chapter 5 and 14 through 16. Here Jesus says, "Ye are the light of the world." I'm using the King James Version in this. Most of my passages are New American Standard. Here I'm using the King James because I just like the way it reads. "For ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid, neither do men light a candle and they put it under a bushel, but they put it on a candlestick and it gives light to all the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." We sing that song to our children. We say, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine right. Hide it under a bushel." And then oftentimes when we're leading that song, Matt, we kind of put our ear out because we want our kids to yell it back. "Hide it under a bushel." No! That's what we want to hear. But then as adults, do we live that example? That's my question. Do we hide our bushel? Hide our light under a bushel? I think sometimes we do, if we're honest about it. Sometimes we do. And I firmly believe that those people that are lost, those people that are living in that dark world, that are out there in darkness, I firmly believe that they are searching, looking for a light. And our duty, our responsibility, our job as Christians is to be that light. To be that light through our lives, through our examples. Let me explain what I mean by that. In chapter 8, in verses 26 through 31, we see in Acts chapter 8, we see the story of the Ethiopian eunuch, a familiar story to all of us. When we know that, we could structure an entire lesson around that one story. But I want to focus in on verse 26 through 31. I want us to look at that. I'm going to point something out to you. It says, "But an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, Get up and go to the south, to the road that that descends from Jerusalem to Gaza." This is a desert road. "So he got up and he went, and there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of all her treasure. And he had come to Jerusalem to worship, and he was returning and sitting in his chariot, and was reading the prophet Isaiah. Then the Spirit said to Philip, Go up and join this chariot. And Philip ran up, and he heard him reading Isaiah the prophet, and he said, Do you understand what you're reading? And he said, Well, how can I unless someone guides me? And he invited Philip to come up and to sit with him." Did you catch that right there, the exchange between Philip and the eunuch? As Philip is approaching that chariot and he hears him reading Isaiah, and he says, "Do you understand what you're reading?" The gentleman says, "How can I unless someone guides me?" I firmly believe that people living in this dark world, that they are searching for a light. Unfortunately, sometimes they find that light in all sorts of different things, or they search for it, rather, in all sorts of different things and never truly find it. Our job as Christians is to be that light, to shine that light through our examples. But also, our job is to be salt. If we back up Matthew chapter 5, and we back up to verse 13, Jesus says this, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out, be trampled underfoot by men." What does salt do? Well, it does a lot of things. It preserves things. It kills bacteria. It's all sorts of things that salt can do. Salt also usually makes things taste better, doesn't it? I believe that's what we're supposed to do this earth, is we're supposed to pour on our salt. Make the earth a better place, but also turn on the light. We're supposed to shine our lights through the darkness. Shine our lights as a beacon so that those who are lost in the darkness know where to go. And we're supposed to make this earth a better place. In Matthew chapter 13, in verses 3 through 9, we have another parable. The parable of the sower, or more correctly, some of you might know it as the parable of the soils. Of course, here the soils represent the different types of a man's heart and how he receives that gospel. The seed, we know, represents the gospel. What does the sower represent? Once again, I want to suggest to you that the sower here represents each and every one of us. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 3, it says, "And he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, Behold, the sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell beside the road. The birds came and they ate them up. Others fell on the rocky places where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up because they had no depth of soil. But when the sun had risen, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. Others fell among the thorns, and the thorns came and they choked them out. And others fell on good soil and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Ears to hear, let him hear. What is the sower doing in this parable? What is the sower doing? He's sowing. He's scattering his seed. As Christians, bringing back the lost, what is our responsibility? It is to sow our seed, to pour on that salt, and to turn on our light. The point I'm making here is that we've all been lost before. As we're sowing that seed, we've got to keep that in mind. We've all been lost before, haven't we? A few months ago, I preached a sermon about turning it around, and I told the story that me and Al one time went to Gatlinburg. And on the way back from Gatlinburg, we actually missed our exit and we drove all the way up to Mont Eagle, Tennessee. And we got up to Mont Eagle, Tennessee, everything looked different. Everything looked strange. And it was dark and it was late at night. And I pulled off, this was before GPS, if you can believe that, and before smartphones. I still had a little flip phone, clamshell phone, that I kept in my pocket. But we got up there to Mont Eagle, Tennessee, and everything looked different. Everything was dark, and we pulled off an exit there. And there in front of us sat this gleaming Burger King sign looking like a full moon. And I said, "Man, I don't know what we're going to do." I said, "I don't either, but they got Whopper Jr. with cheese right there." And we pulled in that Burger King and we sat down, we looked at the map and we figured out where we were going to go. And lo and behold, the only thing we had left to do was to turn completely around and drive back about an hour the other direction. Sometimes life is like that. And so what I'm saying to you is it is important how we bring back the lost. It is important that we keep that in mind when bringing them back. In Galatians chapter 6 and verses 1 through 3, here Paul writes, "Brethren, if anyone is caught in any trespass, you are a spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, then he deceives himself." How are we to restore such a one in a trespass? In a spirit of gentleness. Sometimes we just need a course correction. And we've all been there before, have we not? If we're honest with ourselves and we really take personal inventory, then we've all been at that point where, yes, we need a course correction. So therefore, we can sympathize with that person who's vacated the pew beside us or in front of us or behind us. And we can understand. And that gives us, as Christians, a vital tool that we can empathize with that person. We can understand what they're going through. And what I'm saying to you this morning is that you, as a Christian, as a child of God, you have a duty, a responsibility, an obligation to share that empathy with those people that are lost in darkness. I want to take you back to Gregory's Bald for a moment. And I said that young man that came running to up to us breathless, out of breath, and wondering where the trail was. That young man ran to us right about at the tree line. Remember me telling you about when you walk up to Gregory's Bald, you walk out of the trees onto this grassy meadow. He came running up to us right at the time we were coming to that tree line. And he was running just as fast as he can. And you know what attracted him to us? What made him run towards us? Because we were up there at Gregory's Bald about this time of day. It was dusk. It was getting dark. The sun was going down behind those mountains. And it gets awful dark in those woods. And that young man knew that. And he saw up ahead of him headlights on the trail. He saw our lights on the trail up ahead of him. And he took off running. I believe he even left his wife back there on the trail because she couldn't run as fast as him. But he was going to make it to those headlights. He was going to get there. Because he knew that darkness was encroaching and those lights were his salvation out of those woods. And so as we began our trek back down the mountain and we told that young man what he needed to do, he said, You and your wife, y'all need to stand right here. One of us is going to get in front of you. The other two of us are going to get behind you. We're going to shine our headlights deliberately down at the trail, at your feet, so that what? So that you can see where you're stepping. So that you don't trip on a root. So that you don't trip on a rock. So that we're going to light the way for you all the way down this trail back to your car. And I couldn't help, as we walked for about 3 hours down that trail, with that young man and his wife right in the middle of us, sharing our water and our trail bars with them as we went, I couldn't help but think of this passage in Psalm chapter 119, 105, where it says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." As Christians, that is our duty, that is our obligation, to be a light to the world, a lamp to the feet of those that are lost in encroaching darkness, and to light their path. As we got to our campsite, that young man pulled out his wallet. He began counting out money. And he ran up to us and he said, "Could I buy one of those headlamps off you?" We said, "No, sir." He said, "I'll tell you what, take this headlamp, take it out to the trail, walk the rest of the way. You've only got less than a mile back to your car. Take this headlamp, walk the rest of the way with your wife. When you get there, there's a green Ford Explorer. I want you to put it under the driver's side tire. We'll get it in about 2 days when we hike back out." By 2 days when we hiked back out that morning, sure enough, there was a headlamp underneath the driver's side tire. And with that headlamp was this note. That young man had written this note and he said, "Thank you for your headlight. And thank you so much for your help. You were angels sent to help us. We would have never made it down without you. You guided us in the dark." You guided us in the dark. As Christians, that is our obligation. That is our responsibility. That is what we are to do. To be a lamp to those around us. To be a light in the encroaching darkness of this world. To share our story, share our empathy, and share the most wonderful story of all. That is the story of Jesus. As Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he was being betrayed by Judas, Peter draws his sword to cut off, and he cut off the ear of the high priest, the servant of the high priest, Malchus. There, and Jesus picked that ear up and he healed it, attached it back to the man, healed his ear, and he said, "Do you not know, Peter? Do you not think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and He will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? How then will the Scriptures be fulfilled which say that it must happen this way?" That's the greatest story ever told. And we sing a song to that effect, but the fact that Jesus Christ loved you, loved me enough He loved us so much that He gave His life for us. And that God loved us so much that He laid down the life of His only begotten Son. So how can we as Christians not feel that obligation and that duty and that responsibility to go to those that are lost in the encroaching darkness of this world, shine our lights and try, and gingerly, tenderly, with a spirit of gentleness, guide them back to the path of righteousness. That's our duty as Christians. I use this verse in invitation one time in a little bitty hut in Mexico. And it was about 102 degrees in the shade. It was the hottest sermon I've ever preached. I was sweating. Everybody was sweating and thirsty and tired. And I said right there at the end, I told them this. I said, you know what? I love every one of you. We're all hot. I love every one of you. And I want, more than anything right now, I want some water. But you know, if one of you came up to me and you said, when I've got that glass of cold water in my hand, and you said, that water, if you'll give me that glass of water, then I'll obey the gospel. I'll be a Christian. I'll dedicate the rest of my life for Jesus Christ. Then I'd give you that water right out without taking a single sip of it. Said, I'll take it a step further. If you came to me and you said, you know what, if you'll give me the money that's in your wallet, I'll be a Christian. I said, I'd give you the money in my wallet. So I'll take it a step further. If you came to me and you said, if you give me that car that you drive, or your nice house, or any of your material possessions, then I will follow Christ. It's yours. But if you came to me and you said, hey, you know what? I want your child. I want your son. I want your daughter. If you'll give me them, then I'll obey the gospel. I couldn't do that. There's no way I could do that. You think about that as a parent. I couldn't do that. But the greatest story ever told tells us that that's exactly what God did. He did that for you. He did that for me. And it's incumbent on us. It's our responsibility, it's our obligation to tell that story. If you're here this morning and you've not yet been baptized, then we offer that story to you. We offer this opportunity to come forward to be buried with Him in baptism, and then to rise and walk a new creature, different than you were before. If you're here this morning and you've wandered away, then we give you that same opportunity. If you need to make your life right in a public way, then we offer you this invitation as well. If you have need to respond in any way, if we can help you, why don't you come?